Welcome to the But Why podcast, where we explore the human experience through a psychological lens by asking, but why? And today we are exploring psychological safety and an interesting topic to explore today, 2 days after the US election. So yeah, how's it going, Laura?
I think the real question is, how are you?
that's a difficult one. It's been a difficult one to process for me. So for context, what is today? Thursday. So we're basically a day and a half later for us in the UK, like a day after finding out the election results, and basically woke up yesterday, looked at the results, and basically laid in the dark for about an hour because I was too scared to look at more information, because if I'm awake, that's what I'm doing. I'm looking for information. So I just kind of lay in the dark. And then yesterday was my day to try to process, figure out what was going on. And then today I'm just mad and motivated.
Okay.
And you know what? It's really stressful because there's a lot of implications. So, you know, we talked about last time the Supreme Court being lifetime appointments. There probably will be two of the current justices retiring, which means he'll get to probably appoint two more. So that's just really scary for what the next 50 odd years look like, because then I think, I might be wrong, but I think it might be five, or it would be five if he appoints two, or four of Trump appointed Supreme Court justices, all of which are pre-accepted and put forward by the Heritage Foundation, which are the ones that did Project 2025, which is that document that on day one they want to hit the ground running with all these really regressive policies. So it's actually like really scary, and I think there's quite a few people, you know, any really more marginalized group, but especially, you know, we've got people of color, trans people have been really attacked in this election. There's basically a whole slew of people that are actually really scared, and it's actually terrifying to see what's going to happen. So I'm not really answering your question of how I'm doing, because maybe I haven't even processed that yet.
I mean just through what you're saying though, I mean, I think the word you're saying, like around fear, I think that is, it's fear, and I was gonna say uncertainty, but in a sense it almost feels like he's actually laid out quite clearly like what he's gonna do. So it's almost like just fear if that stuff is actually gonna happen, I suppose.
Yeah. I think that's what confuses me, is because he hasn't really laid out much policy in terms of like the economy, other than like, I'm gonna add tariffs, which will just make life really expensive for everyone in America. But he's been pretty explicit about his social ideas. He wants to deport millions of people. He was proud of, you know, destroying Roe v. Wade, which is women's right to bodily autonomy. So there is a lot of certainty in what we know what's going to happen to a certain group of people. So yeah, I guess maybe that's even more scary. That's a very good point.
And it's just absolutely just mind-boggling how he has sold this to so many people.
It's interesting. This is a big area of interest for me, to put it lightly, is the education people get, and the lack of critical thinking skills, because from my point of view, I think it's kind of intentional, but the lack of ability to see what's, you know, true information or not true information. Like in Finland, they teach their kids how to critically think, to analyze news, to see if it's fake news or to see if it's real. You know, most countries don't fear their citizens critically thinking, and I think ours does fundamentally. So I think a lot of that can be put on our education system, and a lot of it can be put on what our country is kind of founded on, is these ideas of patriarchy and capitalism. And it's really hard to challenge people's notions because they have no coping skills to deal with the cognitive dissonance. So there's so many problems that led to this. Mm-hmm. And I'm just annoyed, to put it lightly. Like, this has been going on since 2015, basically. It's been almost a decade, and I'm tired. I'm just tired.
Tired is, I think that's a very fair way to be feeling. I can't even imagine what it must be like for you. I think for me, I'm so, it's just so confusing. Like, how could anybody think that this was a good idea? But then I suppose for kind of me, and I guess like my family, like we're kind of separated from that to a degree. I actually even have my parents, they booked a they've got a holiday to go to America, I think next November. And my mum was like, "Do you think that it's like safe still to go?" But like that, you know what I mean? Like that's kind of like the things that people are thinking. And like I say, that's from our side where we're kind of slightly separated. But I suppose for you and your family, that I guess, yeah, that uncertainty is, yeah.
I think
Anyway,
that
maybe we
safe
shouldn't talk
that's
about that.
yeah that well that safety piece is what probably makes me the most scared is, you know, it's all the people that know what's going on with this are advising women to delete all their period apps, not just the apps that track it, but all data associated with it. And just that alone, we could be looking at, you know, people having to provide IDs for buying a pregnancy test because it said that at that federal level, they're open to monitoring women's pregnancies to monitor abortions and things like that. So there is that fear. I am very worried about, obviously, the women in my family, all of my friends and family who are from any marginalized group. So it is scary. Not feeling very psychologically safe.
Oh my
But,
gosh,
you know,
yes.
I have a degree of extra psych safety because I'm so separated by being in the UK, where I think, well, at least I can kind of commiserate with some people without, you know, feeling like I'm going to be attacked for it. So,
Yes.
ah, yes.
Wow. Yeah. That's like, yeah, the minimum bar. Yeah.
The bare minimum of
Well,
psychological safety.
yeah. And I suppose maybe on that, shall we segue smoothly into what psychological safety is? Whilst maybe we are in a world that feels not very psychologically safe at the moment.
And I think that again is something that we should touch on is there's that individual level in impacting your psych safety. So in a conversation with you and I'll feel it, but the broader structural level, cultural level right now maybe is not facilitating that. And so obviously we'll get into that a little bit more, and this is why I want to do an episode on the socio-ecological model. But yeah,
Yes,
let's
that
do
is a
it.
nice. Okay, so, well, we'll start maybe by just unpacking a little bit what psychological safety is, because there are a number of, I suppose, opinions that people might have or assumptions about what psychological safety is. It is kind of a word that gets thrown around quite a lot. But it's a word that has been around for a very long time. I actually found it quite difficult to find who necessarily like came up with psychological safety or some contradictory information around that. Like some will say it was like Carl Rogers, some say Edgar Schein or Warren Bennis. But I think the most popularized person who kind of spoke about psychological safety like more recently is Amy Edmondson, who is a Harvard Business School professor. And her definition of psychological safety, I think that she posed in 1999, somewhere around then, was that the belief that one will not be punished or humiliated for speaking up with their ideas, questions, concerns, or mistakes, and the team is safe for interpersonal risk-taking. So I guess a few interesting aspects there if we're thinking about the state of psych safety at the moment, with kind of obviously what Kristen was talking about then around with what's happening in America. There might be kind of very little of that psych safety for some people to feel like they can share ideas safely. And I think the important part here as well is that it's within a group. So psychological safety is within a group or within a team of people. And some other, I suppose, interesting points. So I guess from Carl Rogers, so more in the 1950s, he would talk about needing to establish conditions that allowed us to, I guess, allowed individuals like creativity to thrive. You had Schein and Bennis, who I mentioned before. I really like this quote that they say. They say, "People don't want to be punished for what makes them human." And I think that's quite cool. So I suppose maybe they're referring to like our authenticity or our individuality, saying what we think, having original thought. Like sometimes in some teams, some groups, or say workspaces, we might get punished for speaking out and saying those things. But actually, that's kind of what makes us human.
I think there is, that's definitely, that ties into loads of things. So we'll get into it more, but how inclusivity is a core component of psych safety. But I think that's something people have had to try and minimize those bits of themselves that make them unique and special and human in these, especially corporate, but in a lot of our working and sport environments, because there's this huge drive in the 1900s towards uniformity. And so what would happen is, you know, any kind of stepping outside the norm would be punished in these work environments because it was thought that it would limit efficiency and any challenge was not positive rather than helping grow. It was all about efficiency and not about necessarily overall growth. And so it's almost like turning humans into machines and robots. So I really like that quote, like psych safety is about allowing the space for people to be people. Because if we all have to be forced into a structure where we're working jobs, we should at least be able to be human beings.
Yes, exactly. And I think, I suppose some spaces nowadays, or kind of some organizations, you see this really coming through and people really investing in allowing people to be more creative and so on. But I think in arguably quite a lot, there is still this restriction, like you say, people trying to stay within a box, or this narrative that, like you say, around efficiency. And actually, if we get too many people's kind of opinions, then everything's going to be chaos and it's going to be a mess. So I think that that is a challenging one, I think, for some people to sort of process when we do live in a world that is so efficiency driven.
Yeah. And especially when a lot of the organizations that do this, like, so I think it all comes down to intent. So is the intent to attract people that will want that kind of thing? But really, you're just making it look and putting on that facade of authenticity and you can be yourself. Or is that truly what the organization is about? And it is difficult to run organizations when you allow people to have opinions. But that's just part of being human. And that's just what I really like seeing about how the business world has developed and now the sporting world is kind of catching up, is recognizing actually that if you do allow for that, it actually improves overall performance. You just have to change your leadership style and your organizational structure to be much more values-based.
You just have to change that.
You just have to change probably things that have been in place for like over a decade or more. It's fine. But these businesses that are doing that are significantly outperforming the ones that won't change.
Yes, definitely. And maybe kind of on that, I guess, because like you say, kind of, I suppose this is also getting picked up in, like you say, business, also sport. So a lot of the environments that we've worked in, you hear a lot of people saying psych safety. But sometimes, like, just using it as a bit of a buzzword rather than understanding the depth to it. So I guess I kind of wanted to share kind of a few things that I think are important. So we said before, so it's this safety to take interpersonal risks. So I suppose this is with other people, with like speaking up, saying your mind and so on. But I think importantly, it's this idea of like healthy friction, which I really like this term. So it's not that everybody is like agreeing with each other and everything is like butterflies and sunshine and we're all sharing our thoughts and we all love each other and we're all so safe. It's like more of this idea that I'm sharing my opinion and it may be contradictory to yours and it might create friction, but I know that that is okay, that I can speak my mind and that we can kind of healthily discuss, like healthily disagree, in order to sort of bring in diversity of thought to help us potentially like see different avenues forward. Whereas I suppose the opposite of that might be if we are all coming in with exactly the same opinion, and exactly the same lens on the world, then we're probably going to always be doing exactly the same thing rather than being able to like think outside of that box.
I think that's a really good way to look at it. And adding to that is if you are coming in with different opinions and different outlooks, as many of us are, if the environment doesn't allow you to express those and just enforces you not saying that, that's also not psychological safety, because your environment needs to allow, to an extent, you know, like we talk about multiple times, we've touched on, you know, there's always like things that are inappropriate to say in the workplace or do in the workplace. It's not about just saying whatever you want. It's allowing you to be authentic and not punishing you for it.
And I suppose, yeah, it's also like not just going up to people and being rude and like smashing down their opinions, be like, well, I don't agree with you. Mm-hmm. So it is this, it is, I think there is also this element of like respect for one another and one another's opinions.
Yeah. So I'll go into whether it's sport or business organizations. And one of the first things we do is we look at the psych safety, and people tend to start thinking that psych safety, you know, upon introduction, like, oh, it's about, you know, I can just say whatever I want and I'll be fine. I won't get in trouble. No, that's not it. It's operating within values. Your behavior still needs to operate within the values of the company or wherever you are. And those things kind of naturally filter out people that maybe don't fit in with that value system. But as long as it's values driven and people have good intent, again, there's that intention, then it's okay to have productive friction, as you said, to drive forward.
Yeah. So there's almost like this shared like purpose, like that everyone's sort of moving towards, like you have, yeah, I guess kind of a shared goal in a sense, but it's more around what you all value or find important, like what's meaningful to like that organization, what you want to stand for. So it's kind of moving towards, I suppose, writing that sort of narrative in a sense through maybe like the way that you behave or the actions that like the organization is taking. And maybe here, so maybe it'd be useful. So we've kind of given, I suppose, some definitions, then maybe a bit more nuance into what psychological safety is. I thought we could share kind of some of our experiences of maybe being in a psychologically safe environment versus an unsafe one, and how that was for us. So what do you think? Should we go with safe or unsafe first?
Oh God, you're making me choose. Let's go with unsafe first, and then we'll end on the more positive.
Okay, yeah, fair. Do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
You go first. I'm making you do it this time.
Okay. I had a lot of reflection on this as I was trying to think about it. but I think I was maybe more thinking broadly. So I suppose in a lot, I've always felt, not always, very often felt very uncomfortable in like group scenarios, whether this is just a group of kind of, I suppose, people who like maybe are quite good friends with one another. And I always kind of feel like I'm a bit on the outside. I'm like, I have no idea what to say. I'm just going to sit here and just not say anything, not share my opinion and so on. So I think there's one environment like that where it's like you're with a group of friends, but you kind of feel like you're sort of on the outside. And I think in those situations, I kind of fear saying something that might be wrong or might like throw the conversation off, right? I feel like I function much better in small, one person, two people, one person.
Just conversations with yourself is fine.
That's the ultimate
psychological safety, is conversations with yourself. To be fair, I think conversations with myself is probably where I feel significantly less psych safety.
Oh my god. Well, that's saying something.
Yeah, I know.
But I think something interesting I reflected on, though, was for me, in group, especially I suppose if it's to do with like a work context, or like going to a conference and like seeing new people, talking within kind of different groups of people, for me it's like my perception of the power within that group of people. If I even, it's very strange, like if I even think that that person is, say, like older than me or more experienced than me, I might not even know who they are, but if I perceive that, then I feel very psychologically unsafe, which I was wondering, like, maybe that's just more of a me thing, in that I often will automatically put myself to kind of the bottom of that hierarchy and then feel kind of uncertain about what to say. So I think that's kind of interesting, like how much is this almost like a me thing more so than an the group or the environment sort of thing. And I suppose that's particularly if it is a group you're speaking with kind of a one-off occasion. But then I suppose if it is a team, like if it's a team that we come in contact with kind of often, I suppose there is more responsibility of that kind of group to make the people within it feel psychologically safe. And I suppose that is really where we're coming at with psychological safety, is I would think it's kind of more of groups we're in contact with more frequently than just these like one-off interactions.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think, yeah, with psych safety, especially in this context, we're talking more about like work or team or something like that. And I suppose there is that element of your own individual things will impact your perceptions of the environment and whether you feel psychologically safe. Like, for example, like age might not have to do with hierarchy for somebody else. You know what I mean? Perceptions of power. But yeah. What I would emphasize is, especially, you know, whether it's a large or a small environment, it would be the leader's job who are trying to facilitate a psychologically safe environment to go, okay, something might be going on with Laura. Let's see what the deal is. And it would be on them also to encourage your psych safety by saying, what's going on here? Why isn't Laura opening up the way we thought she would? Is it because of XYZ? And perceptions of power are really important in these organizations. And
yes,
you tend to nowadays try and make them less obviously hierarchical, because obviously it's difficult because you need a direct line of, okay, who's my line manager? Who's my boss? Who do I go to for XYZ? But at the same time, that perception of power can significantly decrease psych safety. So it's a tricky one. Yes. It's really dependent on the culture that you're in terms of like, are you in a corporate company? Are you on a sports team? How large is the organization? So it's a really interesting thing to dig into.
Yeah. And as you were speaking, it made me think of a time I was in a meeting. It was actually when I was working in football and we were having like a staff meeting. And I would say I didn't feel particularly psychologically safe or particularly like, I guess, confident at that point in time in, yeah, contributing, I suppose. But I remember the person who was leading this meeting, they very explicitly asked me like for my opinion. And I really appreciated that because my struggle was, oh, I don't know if this is the right place for me to speak or if I don't know if they want to hear my opinion. But by them kind of inviting me in and asking me, there was an element of me that didn't feel particularly safe, them inviting me allowed me to think, okay, yeah, I am valued and they do want to hear kind of my opinion on this. So I always remember that because it made me feel... made me feel a lot better.
That's such a good example of the basic. It's so when we talk about things like psych safety and implementing these in organizations, people can overcomplicate it and think it's not easy, right, by any means, but they can complicate the how. But that's a great example of a very small thing that anyone who's, you know, a leader, or if they're just your peer in a group, can say, oh, what do you think about this? Because, and we'll get into the inclusion bit again, because, you know, as a woman, you might be less likely to speak up in a male-dominated football environment. And just going, oh, well, we value your opinion here means that you can now apply your expertise to the situation, which improves the performance overall. And I think that feeds into my psych unsafety. the thing that pops into my head all the time when I think about this is working in men's football. Because it's just there, it's not a psychologically safe environment. I won't generalize and say every team, but every team I've worked in, it's not prioritized. And I do a lot of research in this in terms of like problematizing that culture, but it's so hierarchical and the perceptions of power are so ingrained that it makes it true. So, you know, if you're looking at like the manager or the coaches, the perceptions of their power mean that they have that power and what they say goes, and any friction with them means you're going to have a miserable time. And so there's very little psych safety to try and get on the same page with some coaches. And a lot of the work that we have to do is now done with people that might be perceived more on the same hierarchy as us. And so when you're in big multidisciplinary team meetings with all these coaches, I've found it difficult to speak up in those environments because
Definitely.
Even though they're hiring you for your expertise, you know that, or you perceive from my experience that the second you bring something up between the stigma surrounding psychology, being a woman, being a psychologist and not a coach, not having played football, there's all these perceptions that you know they're seeing on you that limit, okay, well, are they really going to value my opinion? And experience teaches me no. So that's definitely an environment that I struggle with psychs to the point where I've turned down like really good football jobs as a result because the culture just kind of was just so unconducive to my psych safety and then therefore mental health.
Yes, totally. And there was something I was going to say, but I forgot what it was.
We did start this really
Oh,
early.
I remember what I was going to say. Okay, here we go. Okay, I'll say it before I forget. So, what you were saying there made me think that you can speak your opinion, right? So you can speak your opinion, but it can still not be valued. And that is, for me, like still not psychologically safe. And I suppose especially because if we speak our opinion and we recognize it's not valued, it's less likely that we are then going to do that again. And I've had that like so much in various environments where I was maybe being like quite candid, and that's a word I suppose that we hear quite a lot in psychological safety. So being quite candid and kind of speaking your mind, and then it's like just kind of ignored, and I'm like, wow, I really like shouldn't have just like put myself out there like that.
Pretty
I'm not
sure
going to do that
you
again.
just described the neurodivergent experience in social situations. Like,
I think that's basically
oh, I
it.
did not read the
Yeah, you really shouldn't have done that.
vibe.
Yeah, that's just life, innit?
Can be. But when you're in a work environment, there's kind of like an onus that you need to have that level because they're hiring you for your opinion and stuff. Whereas I guess in like a normal social situation, whatever that looks like, I guess there isn't necessarily that onus to try and get the best out of you. People can just kind of look at you like, what the hell is going on with this person? I
And
guess in
that's
terms,
fine.
yeah, and that's fine. I just, I feel great about it.
I'm never going to
Yeah.
say anything ever again.
Right, exactly. Kristen, Laura, why are you guys so quiet? Because
I
otherwise,
tried one time and it was scary.
yeah. I guess a
But
time
this.
I. Oh.
Sorry, go on, you go.
No, you go. You go.
No, I was going to say something really off tangent,
Do
so like
it.
you
Do
go.
it. No, do
I was just going to
it.
say this. It made me think about I think a lot of the stuff Amy Edmondson talks about is to do with, I guess, high risk jobs. So in terms of like, say, medicine, or if you are like a pilot, for example, and speaking your mind if something kind of doesn't quite seem right, and as a result of that, you are literally kind of saving people's lives, right? So I suppose in quite a few of the situations we've been talking about here, it maybe feels a little bit more like low level, like, oh no, like Laura's not being listened to. No, what's going to happen? Not much, right? Like you say, maybe there's mental health stuff, maybe there's kind of more kind of inclusion stuff that we'll talk about later. But I think in these very high risk jobs, there is a real serious risk that if there is not psychological safety, then people's lives are at danger or in danger.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. I mean, and Laura and I are doing research right now in the medical field with people who are training to be, certain levels of doctors. And I don't know if we can say the actual stuff, so I'm just being quite vague with it. But we're training
That's fair.
with medical practitioners who have very important jobs, and there's not that much on a lot of kind of that interpersonal human relationship in this field. And it's really important that in medical safe settings, people have the psychological safety, whether that be the patient or the actual expert, to say something about this feels off. And a lot of the issues with patient health has to do with a lack of psychological safety, whether that's between surgeons and nurses or the patient and any medical staff. And so I think, like you said, this can range from, just basic social interactions through to broader, like really important high risk stuff that impacts people's lives. And that's one of the many reasons it's super important. And I suppose that makes me think of when I started to feel psychological safety in a group was when I started performing at my best and started doing research that I really cared about. So one of the things that I, you know, it's always been special interest, like equity and justice and stuff like that for me. But once I finally found a group that made me feel psychologically safe, like you and Amy and Fran and just our kind of broader group, all of a sudden I was able to engage with what are my special interests, but also with trying to make the world a better place. And so we've had a really positive impact on, I mean, you just talked about it at the conference earlier this week about the positive impact our papers had, you know, on women and organizations. And so obviously a much lesser scale than a doctor. Well, I guess I am a doctor, than a medical doctor. but I mean, just that having that established psychological safety where we can bounce ideas off of each other and go, okay, well, this might be a terrible idea, but there might be something to it. I want to bounce this idea off of you. And it's led to multiple different research projects now spanning across, you know, the globe a little bit as well. Women around the globe getting in touch saying our research impacts them. You know, most read paper on the journal, stuff like that. So that's just like kind of a more minor example of how what I didn't realize at the time was me having psych safety probably for the first time in a research context, and then the impacts it can have more broadly.
And I think as well for me, like being in that research group, it almost makes me, I don't know, it makes me almost like not want to do research with anyone else, because I'm like, I'm like, this feels so safe. Like this feels, because I think I am a person who focuses quite a lot on if I get things wrong. But I think one of the things I really like within that group is that we feel, I think it feels like we're equal. I think it's like, if there's something I am, I feel like I can't do, if I'm not very good on a certain topic, I can say to like you or to Amy, like, do you mind kind of picking this bit up? And I don't have to feel bad or like guilty about it. I'm recognizing that it, within that team, we all have different strengths and we are all aware of the strengths that we have. And therefore we can kind of pick bits up and kind of work really collaboratively. So it's not like, it's not like you feel like you're being tested or you've got maybe, say, a supervisor in a, say, higher power role who you're trying to like impress. It's actually like we said, like we were saying before, like we're all working towards the same values. We all want the same end goal. We all want to try and create change within this space. And therefore, it's just much more of a collaboration and a group effort.
And I think it's very easy to forget that all groups aren't like that. And so when you go out to maybe other research groups or other working groups, you're like, oh, yeah, they're not used to my personality being XYZ, or they don't know maybe what maybe my drawbacks of expertise might be. Do you know what I mean? So it's really interesting to get that contrast. Do you think it might be good to chat about the different stages of psychological safety to get a little bit more on the specifics? And so I think, and I'll touch on this even more in a little bit, but the first step is inclusion safety. And inclusion safety basically satisfied that basic human need that's innate in all of us to connect and belong. So whether you've moved to, you know, a new job or school or neighborhood, you know, anything like that. If you have inclusion safety, you feel accepted by that social unit and you feel more open to interact with people because you don't have fear of rejection, embarrassed or punished in some way. And human beings can sometimes have this like fear of other people, stigmatizing outsiders. And that has led to a lot of the problems that we have currently. But we have a need to not have that happen to us. So it's a really weird, contradictory thing that's just happened in our evolution. And so I think it has to be sometimes really overt, granting that inclusion safety to people. Granting that inclusion safety is, from my point of view, like a really moral imperative. And we can create this inclusion safety for others, regardless of our differences, if we're welcoming them in so that they have the opportunity to even just be themselves in the first place. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. It made me think about, right, so there's a yoga studio I go to near me, and there's one yoga instructor, and whenever I walk through the door, she's always like so happy to see me, and she's like, oh my god, hi Lauren. She'll like give me a hug, and I'm like, I feel like so included. Whereas like sometimes if she's not there, then I basically just walk straight through, like, you know, to the changing rooms and into the studio, and I can feel myself a bit more like in my head. Whereas when she's there and she greets me in this way, I feel very welcomed. I don't know if that kind of links into this in your mind or
absolutely,
if it's different,
because there might even be some people. Yeah, I mean, she's welcoming you straight away, and imagine, like, I know you do yoga and Pilates quite a bit, but if it was somebody like me who I used to do it, but it's not my favorite. I'm more of like lifting and stuff like that, just like stuff that I can really get my rage out in. But I can imagine like going into a yoga studio and kind of not getting that inclusion safety, I might just leave, because I'm like, yes, I feel like everyone's judging me because I don't do yoga and I don't fit in. And there's just like that feeling. And even if it's not overt, there could be just that feeling of like, ooh, nobody wants me here. They all think I'm different. Yes. I need to leave.
Mm-hmm. So it can be so easy to get in your head with things like that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that the reason psych safety is a really important one to talk about is humans are social animals. So whether, mm-hmm. you know, you're really social as a person, or you're like me who is autistic and not super social, you still have to satisfy those basic psychological needs of psychological safety in interactions and things like that. It's still really important to us. And next up, we have learner safety, which we probably should do an episode on basic psychological needs. I know that's definitely one of your yes. areas of expertise.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Because it
just explains everything.
It really does. It really does. Because learner safety satisfied the basic needs of learning and growing and autonomy. So it allows us to feel safe as we engage in all aspects of the learning process. So asking questions, giving and receiving feedback, experimenting, stuff like that, making mistakes when we do make them, telling somebody that we've made a mistake. And this ties in a lot to what we were talking about, pilots and doctors and things like that. It's really important. And so we're working with people who train, you know, medical professionals, and you can really see that the people that feel safe enough in that environment to ask questions are probably getting more out of the training. They might, you know, end up with better skill sets, because the ones that don't feel safe enough, even though they should, might not be learning as much as they could. So that lack of learner safety triggers the self-censoring thing that humans do, like, oh, let's just censor what we're doing. So which can really shut down your learning. Really make you go into this mode of like, oh, I'm just going to manage my personal risk and not think about taking on new information.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember, right, this has made me flashback to when I was in year one and we were having like a maths test, and I am so bad at maths, and we got the test and I had absolutely no idea what was going on. And I just basically copied the answers from the person next to me. And I got into loads of trouble because it was so obvious that like I cheated. And the girl I was sat next to was really, really good at maths. But that, I think, was me just not feeling comfortable enough, safe enough to like try and get it wrong. Or potentially in kind of lessons prior to that, saying, actually, I've got no clue what is happening here.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember feeling so ashamed and so embarrassed, because I'm not that sort of person, but I am also the person that hates to get things wrong. And maths was always like my, I don't know, but the thing that I just could not do. So bad at it.
Your Achilles heel.
I think, totally. I was awful. I just had to basically like memorize like what the processes were. Had no idea why, but would just like memorize it and do it. Didn't know what was going on. But there, I think that's potentially what it can lead to, I suppose, if there isn't that learner safety, is that maybe people do cheat. Maybe people do kind of do things unethically because they're worried about speaking up about maybe what they don't know and so on.
Yeah, like you were real willing to risk getting in trouble, which we all know both of us hate getting in trouble.
Yeah, oh my God.
You were willing to risk that because whatever other outcome could have happened from you failing or asking for help or saying that you don't know was more of a threat. So that's really
Yeah.
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how old would I have been? Probably like 5 or 6 or something.
Oh no.
Poor
That's so
6-year-old me.
sad.
I don't know what's going
I
on.
know. Oh no. Oh my God. So we also have the third one is contributor. I always have to get one word wrong. I mean, I guess it's just part of it. Contributor safety. So this satisfies that need to contribute and make a difference, a bit of purpose, but also that kind of relatedness aspect of things. So when this contributor safety is there, we feel like we can safely contribute as a full member of the team, kind of like what you were saying about our team. We all feel like we can use our talents and abilities to participate in the creation process, really. We all have that natural desire to take our expertise, take who we are, and apply that and make a meaningful contribution. And this again translates to the mental health and well-being aspect of needing purpose. You know, it's one of the reasons we hate being micromanaged. It's because we don't have that freedom to be creative, as you touched on, and perform better. And so the more we can contribute as well, the more our competence and our confidence improves, and the more likely we are to contribute again. And so it's this cycle that's really positive. And so when we allow others this contributor safety through maybe what is it? Whatchamacallit? Learner safety and include especially inclusion safety, then they're more likely to contribute, and so on and so on.
That's interesting. And I always kind of like this word, like that kind of competence kind of piece, because I think it's like we can have the knowledge and we can have the skills, but sometimes we just don't feel competent to say like execute it, or but even like just like say confidence and like believing that we can. So it's interesting how it does kind of cycle round in that way. And I think it's also like I think one of the things I've really appreciated actually from so our super so from our supervisor, so Amy, so who we now kind of do a lot of research with, is that I just felt like she just always kind of gave me opportunities to do things and never made me feel like she was worried about me like getting something wrong, you know, that there was like this trust there. And I think that trust is like really important for psychological safety. So I felt like she trusted me, not that she, you know, not that she didn't think I was going to go and get stuff wrong, but like if I did, then that was fine. And that she would kind of trust me to like deal with that stuff. So I think, yeah, I think that for me is a big element. So initially the trust, and then through that kind of building confidence and competence in what we do.
Definitely, definitely. And then last but not least, and this is where it gets interesting because it can, I think, be misconstrued. So there is challenger safety. So challenger safety satisfies that need to change and improve and grow. It's the confidence in the situation to not challenge somebody like, you are wrong, your existence is wrong. So, for example, a lot of people might take psych safety and say, well, that means I can tell, this person that it's like some examples I've seen online, like it's wrong to be gay. It's your lifestyle is wrong. Your existence, this is not what it is. It's the confidence to ask questions such as, like, why are we doing it this way? What if we tried this? Growth questions, not like value and identity questions, if that makes sense. So it's more about challenging the status quo without kind of that retribution aspect or potentially thinking you might get damaged to your career or, your status within an organization. Kind of like how, in our research, we see that women are afraid to challenge the status quo because they might lose their jobs, things like that. So that's what challenger safety is. So it provides a respect and permission for human beings to kind of disagree or say no when we think something really needs to change and overcome that like conformity pressure that we were talking about earlier. And so it depends, you know, we're also, as humans, mitigate risk quite a bit. And so when you've got that psychological safety to not go in that risk mitigation mode, you can challenge the status quo, and then that can lead to positive change. And it also can improve your own feelings personally of well-being and psychological safety, because you're like, okay, well, if there is something wrong, I can challenge this and I know I'll be okay.
Do you think it can sometimes go the other way almost? I'm kind of thinking about if we are, say, challenging, say if we as a kind of witnessed or experienced sexism and we are challenging the person about that. Is doing it in this sort of way, do you think, beneficial for, I guess, kind of like reducing cognitive dissonance? Or do you think that should be kind of handled differently?
What do you mean, like, in the moment saying that you're experiencing sexism? What do you mean?
Yeah, I suppose, like, if we kind of were to, let's say we, like, witness somebody being sexist towards a woman, and we speak to them afterwards and say, like, why did you say it in that way? Or why did you do that? Is that kind of a way to challenge safely some of these quite, I guess, serious issues? Or is that something that should be handled in, like, a different way?
I think that's one of the things that we talked about in our sexism episode, is you need a degree of psychological and physical safety to challenge the status quo. And so it really depends on the environment that you're in. So the person experiencing it, so I'll use examples from work, might be an incoming, you know, physiotherapist or sports psych who's still training or doing their master's or something, and might not have the psychological safety, almost because of that power perception. Is they might perceive that, okay, number one, this person holds all the power in the organization, so no one will listen to me if I question. And also, I don't feel psychologically safe to question it, because I'm lucky to have this job, because you're made to feel that way for sure. But say somebody like you or I, who's more established, might have the psychological and job safety to pull this person aside, especially when I'm brought in to do organizational change. I almost think that's part of my imperative, is to get rid of that kind of stuff. So then I would feel psychologically safe, because that is my job to do it. And, you know, and I've just gained a lot more confidence. Again, what we were talking about, confidence and competence and being psychologically safe are all so related. So I think it's so contextual. Yeah, if you feel psychologically safe to do so, then it's a great way to use that.
I thought it was interesting how you were talking about, you know, you felt like that was, like, your role. And I think it's interesting how some of these, I suppose, challenges, issues, like, we might face, or whether that is around kind of EDI kind of stuff, that's around sexism, kind of racism and so on, who feels like that is their responsibility to speak up for and kind of change. And you're saying here, like, you know, my role is, like, to kind of taking a role of, well, sports psych, doing organizational psychology, right? That's my role. So I challenge it. But then it's interesting, I suppose, for other people within that organization, like, almost how do we create an environment where people see these things as their responsibility as well, rather than, like, just the psychs?
That is probably one of the main goals that I would have, is you kind of, in these situations, work to make yourself irrelevant. So making it so that there are pathways for support, so that it's less hierarchical, so that the perceptions of power are less intense. And you have to ingrain psychological safety through inclusivity. There's literally no other way to do it. And so that can involve some pretty radical change in some of these environments. And, you know, I think one of the pathways I use for reducing this cognitive dissonance and getting people on board is explaining how psychological safety is related to performance. Because if you're hiring a sports psychologist to do organizational psychology, you're clearly interested in performance. So whether that's organizationally, in a business, or in sport. So I talk to them a lot about that. And then I talk to them about the mental health, or I won't say mental health, but I'll say well-being. impacts. And that might be a fun one to do an episode on too. But I talk them through how psychological safety impacts employee well-being, which is obviously also related to performance, and that well-being and performance kind of both are buzzwords, but they're both very important. And they're kind of like my gateway into accessing people's kind of open-mindedness. So I won't go too much into the stats about all of that right now, because I don't think we have time, but it might be an interesting one to cover. So yeah, guys, let us know if you want us to talk about, you know, psychological safety and performance or well-being. But definitely, I think want to do a well-being episode for sure. Yeah. So do you want me to go into inclusion in psych safety at all?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think yeah. So. What are we on? Yeah.
I didn't know if you wanted to move on or if you wanted to touch on anything else.
No, I think that all sounds cool to me. Let's jump to like EDI stuff, and then like I say, maybe we can save more kind of well-being performance for another chat.
Cool. Sounds good. So I want to emphasize that psychological safety and inclusion, they don't just kind of go hand in hand. They are inseparable. So the building blocks to performance in general is you have to have psychological safety, which then allows for inclusion because people are allowed to be seen, heard, and accepted, which creates much more diversity in your organization, which then leads to improved performance because diversity of opinion, thought, skill, and all these things lead to better performance. So you need inclusion. It's literally the building block. So psych safety is, like I said, very values driven. And so everyone is equally deserving of feeling included, valued, and safe to speak up. So this diversity needs to encompass every aspect of the human experience, you know, from gender to cultural and national identity, ethnicity, ability, neurodiversity, social background, LGBTQ+, everything. A team is only as safe as the least safe person. And that's why it's getting really tricky right now to foster psychological safety in these environments, because a lot of them have been very homogenous. Like I said, to be outside of that challenges the status quo and was not psychologically safe. But if somebody on the team holds beliefs that, you know, conflict with a core tenet of inclusivity, there is inherently a conflict. And so a lot of people can think, okay, well, psychological safety means, let's say I am right now, maybe a man that's threatened by being introduced to a topic that they might be uncomfortable with, right? And they want to challenge it and say, no, that's not it. That's not my experience. I challenge what you are saying about this experience. That is opposed inherently to psychological safety because it's basically denying a core aspect of somebody else's existence and lived experience, if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. So it's kind of, even if we don't necessarily believe with, we don't necessarily agree or believe in what someone else's, say, belief system is, that's part of their kind of human experience, and we shouldn't necessarily just shut that down. We should kind of work to understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's been a lot of talk about banning certain topics in workplaces to kind of foster this idea of inclusion, but that's actually one of the worst things you can do because you're actually creating that divide between people. You know, we already have that accidental inclination to form cliques and groups and things like that. And so that actually decreases psychological safety significantly. So what you do in that situation is, you know, we're talking about values, and a value of psych safety and a need of psych safety is inclusion. And so if your beliefs challenge somebody's fundamental rights as a human being, that can't fly, but it needs to be talked out. It can't just be ignored or separated because that's also anti-psych safety. So it's really hard to manage conflict in these environments because it's not just, punish, it's resolve. And so, a really diverse and high performing team usually consists of people from a broad range of backgrounds. And so, of course, there's going to be some conflict somewhere because that's part of that being human aspect. We have different opinions, we've got different experiences, and that's one of the reasons that when combined, we all perform well together. But at the same time, if that core morality tenet, that core value of inclusivity is broken, then cohesion suffers in the team. So it's really just like at its basic core, valuing people as human beings, which honestly is so difficult in this day and age. How do we balance that need for efficiency with still making sure everyone feels like they're a human being?
Yeah, it is. It's that human connection. It's that authenticity. And like going back to what we spoke about kind of at the beginning, like people don't want to be punished for what makes them human. They want to be able to express themselves authentically without this fear of judgment. But then, yeah, the tricky bit comes in when it is if it's beliefs that go against human rights and then navigating them. And I liked how you said it's not kind of punishing, it's like resolving. I think that's I think that's a nice way to sort of view it.
I think it links into that paradox of tolerance as well. So this idea that, we should tolerate every opinion. And it was the philosopher Karl Popper, something like that.
Is that actually
Something
what it is?
I'm trying to think.
Love
I'm like, it's
that.
a weird name, but I think that's something like that. But unlimited tolerance can lead to the extinction of tolerance. So, for example, I think he tied it back into like Nazism and stuff like that. Even extending tolerance to those who are openly intolerant will lead to, giving those people a chance is going to lead to them not allowing tolerance, if that makes sense. That's what was happening
I
in
got
Nazi
lost.
Germany. So, basically, it seems paradoxical, right, in nature. And here, I know we're getting into philosophy. We really don't need to be doing this an hour in.
With Dr. Popper.
Yeah, Dr. Popper. So, defending tolerance unequivocally requires not tolerating intolerant people.
Not tolerating intolerant people. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So defending like inclusivity, we'll change it to inclusivity. Defending inclusivity and tolerance of all people requires us to not tolerate intolerant people.
Okay. Yeah. I can get my head around that. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So
I'm there.
that's kind of my the only reason I say this is that's kind of my ethos is like I strive to be very inclusive and I really value the human experience and people's very unique experiences, but that stops as soon as somebody is questioning somebody's right to be a human being. I do not tolerate the intolerant.
Yes. Okay, there is a line. Yeah.
There's a line, yeah. So
Okay.
yeah, I won't get too
Okay.
much more in because I know we're already at like an hour in. So
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah, I just thought that was an interesting one that kind of like it makes psych safety feel a little bit paradoxical, but when you actually look at it from that point of view, it makes more sense.
Yeah. And maybe kind of as we're kind of starting to wrap up here, we've kind of put down a few things that might be nice for, well, us all to sort of reflect on in terms of considering whether we're in psychologically safe environments or not. So I've just got 5 points here, so I'll just kind of read them out. So firstly, do you feel you can be your authentic self within that group or that team? Do you feel like you can grow? Do you feel like you can create value? Do you feel like you can be candid about change? And do you feel like you can disagree with people in that group productively?
I always tell you should like do audiobooks or like mindfulness. Your voice is just so relaxing. I almost was like, oh, good night. I'm going into like a meditative state.
I used to do like mindfulness recordings for some of my clients, which is fun. But I remember the audio quality used to be so bad. But yeah, thanks.
That's so funny. Well, we're thinking about a few different topics for next time. We're looking at potentially self-awareness, socioeconomical model. Economical? No, I'm not touching on that.
No, thank you.
No, thank you. Socioecological model are probably the two we're looking at. But we could also do a well-being episode or a mental health episode. So let us know what you guys think. I guess just to close out, thank you guys for listening. As usual, we probably have more questions than answers, but we enjoyed exploring psychological safety with you guys. Did this topic leave you with any questions? Make sure to comment and let us know. We'd also love to know if you have any topics you want us to explore. So please make sure to like, follow, engage with however your platform allows, and tell your friends about us. You can find us on various social media platforms, and the link is in the bio of our Instagram and the show notes. And remember, the first step to understanding is asking why.
Yay!